We launch a project with fanfare and high hopes and liberal funding. Over time, it's dumbed down and down and down. We end up with a technical success, but it's so diluted from the original that we might well not have bothered and saved ourselves a lot of money and effort. Call his all-too-common rendition stagnation by mediocre success. 9.6.2. Going all the way. Putting a positive spin on screwing up. What really matters is companies that don't continue to experiment, companies that don't embrace failure, they eventually get in a desperate position where the only thing they can do is a Hail Mary bet at the very end. Jeff Bezos. Embrace, not tolerate. It is not enough to tolerate failure. You must celebrate failure. Richard Farson, author with Ralph Keyes of the book, Whoever Makes the Most Mistakes Wins. Celebrate, not tolerate. In business, you reward people for taking risks. When it doesn't work out, you promote them because they were willing to try new things. If people tell me they skied all day and never fell down, I tell them to try a different mountain. Michael Bloomberg, Business Week, June 25th, 2007. Promote because of failure, not merely tolerate. Keywords: reward, embrace, celebrate, promote. The point. Take this precise language, reward, embrace, celebrate, promote, seriously. Operationalize it. 9.7. Bottom line. WTTMSASTMSUTFW. Whoever tries the most stuff and screws the most stuff up the fastest wins. 9.8.1. WTTMSW. Enterprise as Learning Lab. Our mantra, WTTMSASTMSUTFW, whoever tries the most stuff and screws the most stuff up, the fastest wins. Celebrate small wins and interesting screw-ups. The idea is to build a rockin' and rollin' ethos, all hands trying stuff all the time. Celebrate small wins and small screw-ups on a daily basis. Momentum, momentum, momentum. Rapid prototyping, demo or die. Readily available prototyping budget. Make it easy for virtually anyone to obtain small sums for quick tests of pretty much anything. 1% of the operating budget is play money, seed money, and it must be spent. Transparency. All information available and visible to all. The boss always asks anyone and everyone as a matter of routine, what are you playing with today? Who are our innovators? 100% of us. Make that clear. This is a straightforward list, but the underlying idea is not simple to implement. It's about creating and constantly nourishing a full-bore try-it culture. Needless to say, recalling Chapter 5, this rockin' and rollin' cultural aspiration must be directly reflected in hiring, evaluating, and promoting processes and decisions. Please take the word lab in this title seriously. A laboratory is dedicated to and exists for experimentation. So too our organizational units, each and every one of them, from R&D to purchasing and HR. 9.8.2. Try It Culture Case. Mickey Drexler. The Gap. J. Crew. For more than 3 decades, Mickey Drexler was one of America's most preeminent fashion retailers. The list below is primarily sourced from an article in The New Yorker on his approach to success in an insanely competitive, mercurial, fast-moving industry. Bias for instant action. Towering impatience with inaction. Impatient but not brutal. Relentless speed of light experimentation. more tests ASAP if something is working well, drop ASAP if not. Vibrates with energy. Always on the prowl, anywhere, everywhere, for ideas. Lots of instances of the team standing around making quick assessment decisions with all contributing. Likes working with women more than men because, he observes, females are more intuitive than males. Dresses like the brand. Offense, not defense. Communicates all the time to everyone, including the most junior members who are purposefully drawn in to be part of the decision-making team. Listens attentively, regardless of age or seniority. Obvious in his transparent respect for young employees. Trusts intuition, plus fanatic about the numbers. Expects everyone to know their numbers cold with no assistance from an electronic device. An obsession with MBWA, managing by wandering around. Constant customer contact and dialogue and reacts instantly to customer feedback. I've had the opportunity to spend time with Mr. Drexler. The material above squares with my observations. 9.8.3. Not so fast. I want to make this as difficult as possible. It's reasonably easy to concoct lists like the two immediately above. But if it ain't there already, it's gut-wrenchingly difficult to instill that requisite try-it culture even in small organizations. Playing with stuff comes naturally at age 4, but it's virtually all downhill from there. We are taught in most schools that errors are bad and to be avoided. Most jobs reinforce this bias. Again, serious play doesn't mean sloppiness or less than an all-out effort, but it does mean that we cherish the damn good try that goes awry and from which we learn something of value. I emphasized above the idea of the boss who routinely asks, "What you playing with right now?" And she takes as much or more pleasure from those interesting screw-ups as from the steps forward. Work on it. A day at a time. An hour at a time. Starting tomorrow. Or this afternoon. 9.9.1. Concluding note 1. WTTMSW. WTTMSASTMSUTF. What makes God laugh? People making plans. Innovation is messy. Innovation is non-linear. Innovation is a circus. Innovation depends in full on a robust culture of try it now. Innovation is fun. Innovation is heartbreaking. Innovation is not for sissies. If you know where you're heading, you're not innovating. If things work out as planned, you weren't chasing anything interesting. 9.9.2. Concluding note 2. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky. This quote is my favorite. Number 1 in my 5,000 slide library. Chapter 10. We are who we hang out with. My story. On the way home to Massachusetts from my North American winter sojourn in New Zealand, I made a stop in San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco from 1974 to 1981 and in the Bay Area from 1970 to 2000. I have a special fondness for the city. I had lunch with an old friend on Hayes Street, about 30 blocks from my hotel, then walked back. I was staggered. I'd read and heard about SF's severe homeless situation, but now I was in the midst of it. It was sad, unnerving, a little scary, and a true shock to the system. San Francisco has the second worst homeless stats, a bit behind New York. In addition to the extremely troublesome situation, I realized something else, something obvious. I realized anew that having all one's senses totally immersed in a situation causes an awareness that sticks big time, and that is 10 times or 100 times more profound than reading, watching video clips, or even having serious conversations with people in the know. And that is, in effect, the topic of this chapter, Innovation is about new ways of looking, new ways of sensing, seeing something at the end of your nose for the first time or in a remarkably new way. The topic here, in short, we are what we eat, we are who or what we hang out with. Hardly a profound statement, or is it indeed profound? We talk constantly about new things. How could we not amid today's madness? But do we, with great regularity and systematically, immerse ourselves in the new situations, new contexts, new physical locations, and make contact with new people? Do we have lively and indeed deep discussions about homelessness, but fail to wander the streets for hours upon hours and engage all of our being with the actual situation? I was superbly trained prior to my arrival in Vietnam in August 1966, but in 100 ways I learned more in the first hour on the ground than I had in 6 months of preparation. There was no combat, just an unremarkable 1-hour jeep ride from the Da Nang airfield to the camp where I would be headquartered for the next 10 months. But that hour, all the sensations of the night, the smells and sounds and scenes, turned my world truly upside down in 60 officially uneventful minutes. The same thing happened when I made my first presentation as a youngish McKinsey consultant to a big company's executive team in a big company boardroom. I was technically overprepared, way overprepared, but the actual full set of sensations associated with the 25 minutes submersion, yes, turned my professional life upside down. I don't mean to lump McKinsey presentations with homelessness in San Francisco and a war in Vietnam, but all three events, true full-body immersion in the new, are illustrative of the key idea in this chapter. To deal effectively and creatively with a given context, we must push ourselves hard, very hard, systematically, one day at a time, 1 hour at a time, to become fully engaged with novelty. Novel settings, novel people, novel everything. While, as I said in the introduction, there is much, much more I could offer on the topic of innovation, I have chosen to make 2 points. Whoever tries the most stuff wins, whoever screws the most stuff up wins in the last chapter, and in this chapter, realization and action associated therewith, that we are shaped by the people we cavort with and the situations we are immersed in. And if those situations do not constantly challenge what we think we know, we haven't a snowball's chance in hell of regularly innovating. One feature of this discussion will be to question whether our extraordinary new level of connectedness, courtesy of new technologies, is a true connectedness that leads to breakthroughs in our thoughts and actions. It is so easy, even in 2018, or perhaps especially in 2018, think working from home, to fall into the great same-same trap. And make no mistake, the same-same trap is the death knell of creativity. Hence, the hangout narrative. 10.1. All you need to know. You will become like the 5 people you associate with the most. This can be either a blessing or a curse. Billy Cox, sales training guru. 10.2.1. Innovation, diversity on steroids. We are who we hang out with. Weird times call for weird mates. Opener. Take 1. Fact. We are what we eat. We are who we hang out with. Opener. Take 1. Vernacular. Hang out with cool, and thou shalt become more cool. Hang out with dull, and thou shalt become more dull. On my scorecard, the hangout factor gets equal billing with WTTMSW, WSTMSUW. 1. WTTMSW, WSTMSUW. Insist that everyone be trying anything and everything all the time and as quickly as possible with hoopla and incentives offered for cool screw-ups. 2. Diversity. In upside-down times, demand ensure constant, deep contact with those who are way ahead of the game and those who get under our skin, and thereby potentially save our professional lives. 10.2.2 Innovation, Diversity on Steroids, Message 19th Century equals Message 2018. It is hardly possible to overrate the value of placing human beings in contact with persons dissimilar to themselves and with modes of thought and action unlike those with which they are familiar. Such communication has always been, and is peculiarly in the present age, 19th century, one of the primary sources of progress. John Stuart Mill, 1806 to 1873. No less than a, quote, primary source of progress, unquote, makes perfect sense to me. On the one hand, such a straightforward assertion. On the other hand, it's hard, mind-boggling, to believe how often this axiom is still violated in, God help us, 2018. Regarding diversity qua diversity, the central idea here is diversity on any dimension you can name. Short, tall, fat, thin, Berkeley degree, no degree, techie, artist, philosopher, gardener, collector of vintage model aircraft, small town roots, urban roots, black, white, male, female. 10.2.3 Innovation, Diversity on Steroids, Diversity Tops Experience. Another, Modern Times in this instance, endorsement of diverse groups. From Scott Page's superb book, The Difference, How the Power of Diversity Creates Better Groups, Firms, Schools, and Societies. Diverse groups of problem solvers, groups of people with diverse backgrounds, consistently outperformed groups of the best and the brightest. If I formed two groups, one random and therefore diverse, and one consisting of the best individual performers, the first group almost always did better. Diversity trumped ability. This is an exceptionally powerful and counterintuitive conclusion, and the practical implications are clear. Diversity, once again, on any and all dimensions, leads to better thinking, better problem solving, and greater creativity. Diversity qua diversity beats the experts. Note that Scott Page, a University of Michigan professor of complex systems, political science, and economics, devotes an entire book to this topic and presents a truckload of sound research to bolster his argument. While I have long and unequivocally bought into the diversity idea, I was startled by the ability to propose and support such an encompassing and strong argument for diversity. Please, stop. Listen to the Scott Page quote again, and perhaps buy his book. Consider the practical implications, in particular the tendency to over-rely on experts, for example, you and your leadership team. Should, for example, every major decision from strategy to a critical promotion involve or be reviewed by a panel of non-experts? 10.3. Innovation, Diversity on Steroids. Every decision. At its core, every relationship, partnership, location, time allocation decision, and so on, is a strategic diversity of perspective decision. Innovate, yes or no. Diversity, that is innovation, decisions. Staff selection and promotion. Choice of external consultants. Customers. Adrian Slowatsky, Mercer Consultants. Future defining customers may account for only 2% or 3% of your total, but they represent a crucial window on the future. Outsourcing partners, exceedingly important. Vendors. Wayne Birkin, Wide Angle Vision. Beat the competition by focusing on fringe competitors, lost customers, and rogue employees. There is an ominous downside to strategic supplier relationships. A strategic supplier is not likely to function as any more than a mirror to your organization. Suggestion: read Birkin's book, another full volume on diversity qua diversity. The Whole Wide World, Crowdsourcing Every Damn Thing. Calendar, time allocation. This is critical. Assess your calendar, and odds are that one month looks pretty much like the rest. Only a day-at-a-time evaluation will lead you in the direction of planned variety of time allocation. Product portfolio. Too many line extensions, not enough pioneering efforts. A former Ford chairman. If I make a new product decision and am not anxious, I am fearful I've approved no more than a lookalike. Headquarters location. GE moves from Fairfield, Connecticut to Boston to expose itself to a more broadly innovative community as it follows its bet the company strategic thrust into the IoT, Internet of Things. Lunch. 220 working days per year equals 220 diversity opportunities. This is a very big deal, a matchless golden opportunity available to one and all starting today. Today equals today. And yes, I am repeating myself. Board of Directors composition. No same-same. See below. On each dimension above, do we go with the safe bets, or do we dare to embrace a rich portfolio of edgy partners, employees, customers, etc., who will drag us, kicking and screaming if necessary, into the eye of 2018's perfect storm? Recall in the section on hiring, 5.4.1, that Sachiro Honda preferred, quote, people who had been in trouble, unquote. Now that's anticipating the spirit of 2018. 10.4. Innovation. Diversity on steroids. A board fit for 2018. Strategy guru Gary Hamel speaks in plain and profound terms to the worst of all manifestations of myopia. The bottleneck is at the top of the bottle. Where are you likely to find people with the least diversity of experience, the largest investment in the past, and the greatest reverence for industry dogma? At the top. In fact, the most poisonous example of same-same is frequently the board of directors. Here's my tongue-nowhere-near-cheek response, inspired by Mr. Hamel. 10-member board of directors fit for 2018. At least 2 members under the age of 25. New youth with new tech have had a different developmental experience than their elderly, say 35-year-old, peers. At least 3 or 4 women. Boards with a balance of females and males produce very high relative performance. See Chapter 15. 1 IT data analytics superstar. Not an, quote, IT representative, unquote, but a certified goddess or god from the likes of Google. 1 or 2 entrepreneurs and perhaps a VC. The entrepreneurial bent must directly infiltrate the board. 1 or 2 people of stature with, quote-unquote, weird backgrounds. Artist, musician, shaman, etc. We need regular, uncomfortable, oddball challenges. A certified design guru. Design presence at board level is simply a must in my scheme of things. See Chapter 11. No more than 3 with MBAs. Why? The necessity of moving beyond the typical MBA linear analytic overquantified mindset. Partial inspiration for this. Cybernetics pioneer W. Ross Ashby's Law of Requisite Variety. The diversity of the board should more or less match the diversity of the overall business environment. 10.5. Innovation, diversity on steroids, the power and necessity of discomfort. Legendary ad man Jay Chiat tells us, I'm not comfortable unless I'm uncomfortable. I treat Chiat's remark as a logical and literal command. Or consider this version of Chiat's formulation from Eleanor Roosevelt. Do one thing every day that scares you. Mrs. Roosevelt's edict is so much easier said than done. In general, same-same is invariably our default position. So how do you or I channel Eleanor Roosevelt, a woman who thrived on what others called the impossible? The obvious answer is the only answer: conscious, continuous, self-monitored effort, one day at a time. Federal Express founder and CEO Fred Smith casually asked me, "Tom, who's the most interesting person you've met in the last 90 days, and how do I get in touch with him?" Several years ago, Smith and I sat together on a CNN economics panel. In the green room before our appearance, he popped the "most interesting person" question above. Frankly, I didn't have a good answer, and I am still mortified by that experience. For heaven's sakes, exposure to interesting people is what I supposedly do for a living. How else keep up or stay ahead of the herd? So, have you got a good answer to Mr. Smith's question? And if not, what do you plan to do about it? ASAP. 10.6. Innovation. Diversity on steroids. All connected to all. The Billion Man Research Team. Companies offering work to online communities are reaping the benefits of crowdsourcing. Headline, Financial Times. Connectional intelligence, labeled CXQ by the authors, is the ability to combine the world's diversity of people, networks, disciplines, and resources, forging connections that create value, meaning, and breakthrough results. Erica Dewan and Saj Nicole Joni. Get big things done. The power of connectional intelligence. Simply put, the ability to tap into global diversity has expanded exponentially. The implications range from the work of giant companies and laboratories to the smallest of local projects. Consider two extremes. 10.6.1. Connect, connect, connect. ResearchGate. Conversations among 11 million scientists. ResearchGate was founded in Boston in 2008 by virologist and computer scientist Dr. Iyad Madish. It now has over 11 million vetted members from throughout the science and research community. Here's a partial description taken from Wikipedia. ResearchGate is the largest social networking site for scientists and researchers to share papers, ask and answer questions, and find collaborators. Those who wish to use the site need to have an email address at a recognized institution or to be manually confirmed as a published researcher in order to sign up for an account. Members can upload research output, including papers, data, chapters, negative results, patents, research proposals, methods, presentations, and software source code. Users may also follow the activities of other users and engage in discussions with them. The possibilities are infinite. The results have surpassed expectations by many a mile. 10.6.2. Connect, connect, connect. Ms. Marks hosts her book group. From Patricia Marks, Outsource Yourself, The New Yorker. The prospect of contracting a gopher on an a la carte basis is enticing. For instance, wouldn't it be convenient if I could outsource someone to write a paragraph here, at this point in her New Yorker article, explaining the history of outsourcing in America? Good idea. I went ahead and commissioned just such a paragraph from Get Friday, a, quote, virtual personal assistant, unquote, firm based in Bangalore. The paragraph arrived in my inbox 10 days after I ordered it. It was 1,356 words. There was a bibliography with 11 sources. At $14 an hour for 7 hours of work, the cost came to $98. In this wonderful article, Marx describes in detail crowdsourcing everything associated with hosting her book club. That included seeking out clever comments on Proust for her to make, since she hadn't had time to read the book. In fact, a set of excellent comments only set her back $5. The writer, contractor, Proustian expert, was a 14-year-old girl from New Jersey. All connected to all, from 11 million scientists to a local book group. Message 2018, Stoke the Fires of Innovation. Connect, connect, connect with anyone and everyone from anywhere and everywhere all the time. The usual and all-important caveat and reminder is in order. Technology is the enabler, but attitude and culture are the last 90%. Connecting in the end is a disposition, not a tech trait. 10.6.3. All connected to all. Version 2018. More or less than meets the eye. Connected ain't what it used to be. Connected with songlines in the Australian bush. See Bruce Chatwin's marvelous book, The Songlines. Connection was the Pony Express in the American West, and then the trains. The real breakthrough and accelerator was the telegraph, called by some the Victorian Internet. Then phones, and most recently, of course, the Internet itself and its derivatives such as smartphones. All these landmarks were forms of connect, connect, connect. Today we live in the age of Facebook. And, age 6 or 60, connection means thousands upon thousands of friends. It is connection, and it is non-trivial. On a deeply serious note, new connection tools enable the billion-man research team that kicked off this section. But I do mean to remind you, me, us, that there are connections, and then there are connections. As I've said and will keep saying, relationships are the heart and soul of excellence. But the relationships I mostly point to with employees, customers, our communities, are relationships that take time. Lots and lots and lots of time to develop and then to nurture. By hook or by crook, we must invest dearly in deep connections. Please, do not forget that for a single moment. 10.7. Innovation, diversity on steroids. Hangout, final words. Your hangout with portfolio can be and should be as carefully concocted and managed and evaluated as your budget or strategic plan. It is your de facto strategic plan. Who you spend your time with may well be the single most important variable associated with your personal and enterprise success. 10.8. WTTMSW, WSTMSU, diversity, summary, ubiquity, and scoring big on the holy shit scale. Iron innovation equality law. The quality and quantity and imaginativeness of innovation and formal R&D shall be the same in all functions. For example, in HR and purchasing and logistics, as much as in marketing or product development. Wild and woolly HR department, yes. Wild and woolly purchasing department, yes. Wild and woolly logistics department, yes. Project Innovation Evaluation Index. List your top 5 active projects. How many score 8? Or higher on a 10-point knock your socks off, wow, holy shit scale. If less than 3, worry. Worry a lot. Get on it. Now. Now equals now. Section 5. Adding value, a top line obsession. Chapter 11. A passion for design. Differentiator number 1. My story. On a late February day in 2016, it rained cats and dogs in Takaka, New Zealand. I was coming out of the hardware store and had my iPhone, as usual, deep in my pocket when the surprise storm hit. The pocket protection was not enough. The water snuck in somehow. The phone was inoperable, kaput, though I tried every trick to revive it known to man and the internet. Gorgeous, functional, and done in by a bit of rain. Bottom line, bad design. Sorry, Ghost of Steve. Well, it ain't gonna happen twice. Now, if there's even a single cloud in the sky, I carry my phone safe in a Ziploc bag. Ziplocs, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I do love my any and all purpose Ziplocs so much so that I've got a reputation for wretched Ziploc excess. For my 60th birthday, one of my business partners put together a book of letters that he'd collected from my various friends and colleagues wishing me well. The book was touching, and at times hilarious. Those present at the subsequent birthday bash read their contributions. The partner and pal who pulled all this together had contributed a piece of his own, which he read with gusto to the gathered guests. The entire piece, about 600 words, was about me and my Ziplocs. There's a whole drawer in my office filled with Ziplocs of every size, from the sandwich size, useful in a thousand ways, to the 2-gallon giants, sometimes hard to find, and without which I simply could not exist. I think my Ziplocs have as much beauty as they do utility. One of my favorite aspects of the bags is that when you seal them up, there is a memorable clicking sound that tells you that you've done it right. No rain will intrude to ruin a several-hundred-dollar iPhone. That's for damn sure. Why in the world am I relating this story? Simple. I love things that are brilliantly designed. Peerless functionality, aesthetically pleasing, emotionally irreplaceable. And I hate things that are designed in a slovenly or careless fashion. They are not problematic, they are insulting. I fear I have nary an artistic bone in my body. I dropped out of architecture school after one semester. It was clear to me that the artistic bit and I would never co-reside. I shifted to civil engineering, from which perch my colleagues and I would criticize the architects for the unbuildability of so many of their gorgeous on-paper concoctions. No, I'm not an artist, but I have an appreciation and abiding affection for things whose design does no less than blow me away. From those Ziplocs to my tough-enough mini striker stubby claw hammer. And, as Steve Jobs intended and obsessed on, the attractive, smoothly functioning boxes in which Apple products arrive at your door. Let's pause and turn to the bigger picture of me and design. I had just had a GZE, great Ziploc experience, about 25 years ago when I was on the verge of giving a speech to packaging equipment dealers. In that speech, I sang a Ziploc love song and, unschooled though I was, turned that riff into a paean on love or hate, not like or dislike, engendered by design in general. From there, it was off to the races. I rarely do things halfway. My given name is Thomas J. Peters. My wife insists that it's Thomas E. Peters, where the E stands for excess. So after that first talk, I kept turning up the volume and started doing my homework. Design, I concluded way back then, was arguably differentiator number one of any damn thing. For good or for ill. I ranted and raved and deepened my design appreciation, positive and negative, to the point that, for example, I ended up keynoting, ranting and raving, a top-drawer design conference in New Zealand and in the United Kingdom. And one of America's most prominent designers, IDEO founder David Kelly, labeled me, quote, the business world's leading ambassador of design, unquote. Well, damn it. There are still far too many who don't get it, who remain oblivious to the allure of great design and are unaware of how the tiniest design boo-boos can enrage a customer. Great design moves mountains and vaults market share to the heavens. I think that's pretty much always been the case, but a design emphasis today is many, many times more important than in the past. In the age of ubiquitous robotics and algorithmic this and algorithmic that, standing out from the crowd is getting tougher and tougher. Well, I think standing up and standing out can be done. I will, in fact, present design and 8 other differentiation strategies in this section, but not one of them is more important than the first by acclamation on the list, design that engenders no less than love. Zippity-doo-dah ziplocks, and much, much more. The Design Narrative 11.1 Design D-Day, Design Day, August 10th, 2011 Design Rules Apple market capitalization is number one, surging past ExxonMobil. When Apple's market cap exceeded ExxonMobil's on August 10, 2011, there should no longer have been any issue about design power. Now only idiots will ignore it in enterprises of any and every size and flavor. For 2 decades, I'd been ranting and raving on the topic of design. The struggle was uphill and mostly futile. You could almost say that everything changed that day when Apple shot past Exxon. That, of course, overstates. But the D-Day 2011 event surely did make the design message hard to dismiss, even or perhaps especially among the number munchers in the finance department. 11.2.1 Design equals care. Design equals care. Design equals elegance. Design equals the best of human achievement. Design equals contribution to human culture. Design equals respect. Design equals thoughtfulness. Design equals avoiding insult. Huge degree of care. From Ian Parker in The New Yorker on Apple design chief Johnny Ive's approach to creating products. Steve and Johnny would discuss corners for hours and hours. Loreen Powell Jobs. Expose yourself to the best things humans have done, and then try to bring those things into what you're doing. Steve Jobs. In some way, by caring, we're actually serving humanity. People might think it's a stupid belief, but it is a goal. It's a contribution that we hope we can make in some small way to culture. Johnny Ive. Apple's great design secret may be avoiding insult. Their thoughtfulness is a sign of respect. Elegance in objects is everybody's right, and it shouldn't cost more than ugliness. So much of our manufacturing environment testifies to carelessness. Paola Antonelli, MoMA. Great design is wow. Great design is utility. Great design is ease of use. I believe those 3 statements. Passionately. But let's go further. Consider the words in the title of this section and in the quotes from which they were drawn. Care, elegance, the best of human achievement, contribution to human culture, respect, thoughtfulness, avoiding insult. I would like to raise the stakes and the bar as high as possible in this section. I hardly suggest that you and I are Steve Jobs clones, and our playground decidedly is not Apple. But that's no excuse for not raising the bar to the sky in everything we do for our customers, and, for that matter, for our colleagues and our communities. Consider care and corners. In your organization of 1 or 101 people, does care enter into every discussion of customer connections, from the sales pitch to web presentations to next client email to supporting logistics systems to the delivered product or service itself? Are our corners, the tiniest bits of those products and services, given something like the attention that Johnny and Steve gave to Apple product corners? Contribution to human culture is a lot to ask of the blog I'm about to post. Or is it? I have neither the time nor resources nor skill to match Johnny and Steve in my blog post. But I can think about it. I can slow down and reread 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 times. I can wonder if a few word changes might make the blog post sing and have emotional impact on those who choose to read it. I sure as hell can work on avoiding insult. No lousy grammar, no carelessness of any sort, a little more time on word choice, a little more original and a little less management babble-ish, and so on. I think these words and terms, care, elegance, best of human achievement, contribution to human culture, respect, thoughtfulness, avoiding insult, can be etched in the back of my mind, challenges that I can try to grab hold of in some way or other, day in and day out, hour in and hour out. There is no damned excuse for being careless or thoughtless in any interaction. In my case, no damned excuse for not attempting to get into the heads and hearts of every single one of the 700-plus people who will be in my audience this morning in Edmonton, Canada. People who have generously given me an hour of their precious time as they listen to my talk. If I don't give my all and then some, I'll have the ghost of John F. Kennedy on my case. JFK told us never to open our mouths in public if our goal was not to change the world. Too grand for you or me? Perhaps. But then again, maybe not. Yes, my Design Is All riff is an unabashed, unadulterated sermon, and I pray it just might make the tiniest bit of difference. Try this out. Design is everything. Everything is design. We are all designers. Richard Farson, The Power of Design, A Force for Transforming Everything. It took me and my colleagues and our designer, Ken Sylvia, 2 years of on-and-off dialogue and presentations to create the logo for the Tom Peters Company. And what did that painstaking 2-year effort result in? Our logo is a standalone red exclamation mark. That's it. The whole deal. The whole kit and caboodle. And I could not, 25 years later, be happier. What I try to do every day in every interaction, including every tweet, and I've produced well over 50,000, is to be a red exclamation mark. To challenge, to provoke, to make a smidgen of impact. As I see it, there's no reason that you and I can't make big waves in our local market by grabbing hold of and living a design excellence obsession. That is the message of this section, and it is the message of this book. The excellence dividend is about going on offense, about creating products and services and organizational climates and customer and community attachments that will more than survive any technology onslaught. 11.2.2. Design. What matters? Leaving a bit of your heart behind. He said for him the craft of building a boat was like a religion. It wasn't enough to master the technical details of it. You had to give yourself up to it spiritually. You had to surrender yourself absolutely to it. When you were done and walked away from the boat, you had to feel that you had left a piece of yourself behind in it forever. A bit of your heart. On the world's premier racing shell designer and builder, George Yeoman Pocock, from the boys in the boat, nine Americans in their epic quest for gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics, Daniel James Brown. The best-selling Boys in the Boat is a heartwarming saga of the American eight-man crew from the University of Washington that won the 1936 Olympics. In addition to the oarsman, one of the heroes is Pocock. The technical bits of rowing shell design are intimidatingly complex. But in Pocock's view, that's just the start of the story. The heart of the matter is, you had to give yourself up to it spiritually. You had to surrender yourself absolutely to it. That makes sense to me. And as I compose this sentence, I'd say precisely the same thing is true about writing a book. You need good material. You need to be a halfway decent craftsman in putting prose together. But like Pocock, I believe that's just the start. There must be some spiritual attachment to the material which has, I hope, from time to time been transmitted through the pages you are listening to. My point, though, is neither racing shells nor this book. It is you. Consider the layout of the restaurant you are planning to open and for which you have shelled out every penny of your net worth and then some. The layout must work and be within budget. But for your dream to come true, even if you have a superb chef, there must be, from day one, something spiritual about the restaurant, or, I'd almost guarantee, it'll either be a ho-hum or an outright flop. And I would use exactly the same words to describe your efforts to design a new training course or marketing campaign if that's the focus of your professional life. 11.2.3. design that is transformative, epic screws with deeper meaning. Nest founder Tony Fadell admitted, "Every business school in the world would flunk you if you came out with a business plan that said, oh, by the way, we're going to design and fabricate our own screws at an exponentially higher cost than it would cost to buy them. But these aren't just screws. Like the thermometer itself, they're better screws, epic screws, screws with, dare I say it, deeper meaning. Functionally, they utilize a specific thread pattern that allows them to go into any surface, from wood to plaster to thin sheet metal. And the custom screwdriver feels balanced to the hand. It has the Nest logo on it and looks nesty, just like everything from Apple looks apple-y. Rich Carlgaard, The Soft Edge. Pause, please. Epic screws with deeper meaning. Please try to translate Fidel's sentiment into the at-first-glance mundane project you are working on right now. I know not what the substance of that project is, but I am dead certain that Mr. Fidel's words apply to that project and to you. 11.2.4 Design. Oscar for most smiles. It is fair to say that almost no vehicle in recent memory has provoked more smiles. The New York Times review of the Mini Cooper S, reported in Donald Norman's Emotional Design, Why We Love or Hate Everyday Things. Donald Norman is a highly influential and longtime champion-in-chief of design functionality, as opposed to the traditional aesthetics-first definition of design. Yet, in a more or less epiphany, he came over a period of decades to appreciate the limits of both aesthetics and functionality. Hence, his superb book that is one long paean to emotional design. Emotional design equals more smiles. FYI, as a companion to Norman's book, peruse Guy Kawasaki's Enchantment, The Art of Changing Hearts, Minds, and Actions. Among many other things, Kawasaki was a principal player in the design and marketing of the first Apple Macintosh. 11.2.5 Design as Religion, BMW. Design is treated like a religion at BMW. Fortune. I am not a Beamer owner, but I did rent a floor of my office building in Palo Alto to BMW. They treated the styling of their tiny Silicon Valley outpost, as they called it, with the same degree of reverence they shower on the creation of their cars. It's all of a piece and an integral part of the BMW way of being as far as they're concerned. BMW. Office space equals auto equals religion. 11.2.6. Design as see, touch, hear, smell, or taste. Starbucks. With its carefully conceived mix of colors and textures, aromas and music, Starbucks is more indicative of our era than the iMac. Starbucks is to the age of aesthetics what McDonald's was to the age of convenience, or Ford was to the age of mass production. The touchstone success story, the exemplar of the aesthetic imperative. Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz says, "Every Starbucks store is carefully designed to enhance the quality of everything the customers see, touch, hear, smell, or taste. All the sensory signals have to appeal to the same high standards. The artwork, the music, the aromas, the surfaces, all have to send the same subliminal message as the flavor of the coffee." From Virginia Postrel, The Substance of Style, How the Rise of Aesthetic Value is Remaking Commerce, Culture, and Consciousness. Starbucks and Design and Romance and Soul Lost and Refound. Starbucks had become operationally driven, about efficiency as opposed to the romance. We'd lost the soul of the company. Howard Schultz on Starbucks problems that caused him to reclaim the CEO job. Schultz, by the way, calls his association with Starbucks a love story. FYI, since Schultz returned, Starbucks has indeed gotten its mojo back. Romance. Add romance and or love story to your Thoughts on Design notebook. Caution flag. The Schultz vignette also demonstrates how almost inevitable it is that romance fades with rapid growth. Keeping a culture fresh and a romance alive is a monumental task. See Chapter 3. 11.2.7 Design, Love Marks. Shareholders very seldom love the brands they have invested in, and the last thing they want is an intimate relationship. They figure this could warp their judgment. They want measurability, increasing returns always, and no surprises, ever. Imagine a relationship with someone like that. No wonder so many brands lost the emotional thread that had led them to their extraordinary success and turned them instead into metric munchers of the lowest kind. Watch the sign, heads, not hearts, at work here. When I first suggested that love was the way to transform business, grown CEOs blushed and slid down behind their annual accounts, but I kept at them. I knew it was love that was missing. I knew that love was the only way to ante up the emotional temperature and create the new kinds of relationships brands needed. I knew that love was the only way business could respond to the rapid shift in control to consumers. Kevin Roberts, former CEO, Saatchi & Saatchi, in his book, Love Marks, The Future Beyond Brands. Kevin has been a mentor of mine for years. I've given away dozens of copies of his book, Love Marks. It is original and challenging, and the message of this chapter, it applies to all of us and to our every project. 11.3.1 Design, the third dimension and why it matters now far more than ever before. Design means buying the act, remember, Apple surpassing Exxon in market capitalization, then taking the plunge and hiring a first-rate designer or two, then let them have at it. But as I've tried to illustrate in the quotes above, design with impact, design that changes everything, is much, much more. Effective design is about superior usability, check. It's also about aesthetic excellence, check. And then there is that third dimension, called heart, or care, or romance, or surrender, or, why not, love mark. Design that turns perceptions upside down, in the corner store as well as at Apple or BMW, involves achieving some form of spiritual connection with the customer and, thence and first, among ourselves. I normally run like the Dickens from terms like spiritual, but not in this instance. It is simply misleading to talk about compelling, lasting, shape-shifting, love affair-inducing differentiation by design without using such words, and somehow or other bringing them to life in every corner of the large, small, or tiny enterprise. Axiom. This care or heart holds equally for internal products, such as training courses and business processes. Believe it. Hypothesis. This third dimension will have great pragmatic importance beyond product and service differentiation. As technology, AI, etc., vacuums up more and more of the standardized work of the organization, activities associated with this so-called third dimension will be the centerpiece of the role that humans continue to play. 11.3.2 Design, the list. Care, respect, thoughtfulness, corners, more smiles, a bit of your heart, epic screws with deeper meaning, religion, romance, soul, love mark, spirituality, Apple surpasses Exxon. 11.3.3 Design is the reception area, the restrooms, dialogues at the call center, every electronic or paper form, every business process map, every email, every meeting agenda, setting, and so on, every square meter of every facility, every new product proposal, every manual, every customer contact, a consideration in every promotion decision, the presence and ubiquity of aesthetic sensibility and design mindfulness, an encompassing design review process for more or less everything, every project, every system, etc. Typically, design is a vertical stripe in the chain of events in a product's delivery. At Apple, it's a long horizontal stripe where design is part of every conversation. Robert Bruner, former Apple design chief. Every conversation. There is no reason, none, zero, that this formula